Many of you may not be aware, but one of them, when I was around 20, and I met my wife. She was Christian, and I was kind of wandering. And one of the first churches I went to after becoming a Christian, because of my wife, primarily at the time, was at Prosperity Gospel Church. And the Prosperity Gospel, there's an essential idea that if you give God gifts, that you'll be blessed. And it's also tied to faith, which is to say that if you have faith, you'll be healed. And if you give, you'll receive more. And there was a heavy emphasis on financial giving. One particular Sunday that I was there, I remember that we had a guest preacher. This is a large church, sits about 5,000 or so at the time. And the guest preacher, of course, was preaching about giving and money. This was very typical. This was pretty much a weekly thing. And by the end of the service, he was standing in what was essentially a mountain of checks and dollars. And most of the people that went to the parish were probably somewhat poor. But when they put all this money and these checks and everything, they had ushers come out and they had trash bags, the large construction trash bags full of checks and money laying at this man's feet. Simply talking about that if you give, it'll be given back to you if you give with faith. Now, if you were poor, it meant in that particular faith that you weren't giving. And so oftentimes, anyways, I'm not going to get into the theology of the prosperity gospel, enough to say that it's absolutely heretical. But beyond that, it was also very manipulative. Very manipulative because the people who were the receivers of these gifts often lived very lavishly, while many people who were asked to give often could barely afford to live. And their lavish living and the missing message of the cross, of course, is the biggest problem. But it was interesting to see the generosity of the people, but it was all done in such a way where it felt manipulative. I mean, you talk about it long enough, you whoop people up, you play the right number on the piano, and then people come forth and they give. And that's manipulative. There's another way to collect money in churches. You know, churches are charity. Another way is by guilt and compulsion. And so we could give you a law. And the law says that you tithe. And in Malachi it says that if you don't tithe, you're robbing God. This was a verse that was often spoke of in the particular church I was at. That you didn't want to rob God because God was like a gangster. And when you rob a gangster, he doesn't protect you anymore. Matter of fact, he not only doesn't protect you, he sends out his ministers to take out your kneecaps or to take you out somehow. And so there was compulsion that you were robbing God. There was a guilt. There was shame. And there was all sorts of ways to elicit money from people, playing on their emotions, playing on their sense of duty. In today's epistle, Paul does not appeal to duty. He does not appeal to their emotions, but he appeals to their very generosity of heart. The Corinthians, in particular, in today's epistle, were said to be a wealthy place. And they were taking up a charity for another church that was in need. And Paul admonishes them to give freely, to give not begrudgingly, because it's the gifts that are given freely and without any grudge that are sincere and truly acceptable unto God. Because if I'm manipulating you to give to me, I am playing on your human psychology and emotions. And ultimately, you're doing it to be seen by men, or your fear of how you'll look in front of other people. But if it comes from the very generosity of your heart, in this idea and this willingness that you want to serve and that you want to give graciously and generously, then it is said that that is a well-pleasing offering unto God. And I have to say it's hard. There are so many books that I've looked at, I've read about financing a church, and there's situations that churches deal with. Is number one, it's often, if you're not in a prosperity gospel church, if you're in another church, it's often considered taboo to talk about money. That if you talk about people giving, because as I've heard, many, many Christians who no longer go to church will tell me the reason they no longer give is because it seemed like the preacher was always asking for money. And so many other preachers in repulsion of this idea never talk about it because it's taboo. Because it's not stuff. It's like politics, religion, and we don't talk about how much you make and how much you give. That's your secret. In the stats within the Orthodox Church in the USA, with all jurisdictions, I think they averaged it out that the average parishioner and a full member of the church gives about 2% of their income. Now, if you were to average this out, you know the law of averages is basically that means that many people give more than their share, more than 10%, and then many people give hardly anything, a dollar in the bucket, and then you put them all together and it averages out that per capita, 2% of people's income is given to the church. And churches, of course, financially struggle because of that, and they have trouble taking their message. There's all sorts of churches all over our diocese that will take years longer to build and to grow because of that lack of generosity and or the lack of means that they have. But it's not only financially that churches struggle. Every priest I've ever talked to says that oftentimes when we do pledge drives or budget drives or whatever type of drive, that sometimes there is a lot given financially. But oftentimes giving financially, and this is ironic, is easier than actually giving of ourselves. There are many parishes that are financially wealthy but can't find anyone to actually do the work of the church. It would actually talk about hiring people to serve the poor. Hiring people to serve the poor because the people didn't want to do it. They'd rather sublet it and have someone else do it. And so what we have is a struggle where we could admonish and try to manipulate out of duty, out of shame, out of embarrassment, out of all sorts of motivations. But the challenge is for us, each one of us, to ponder in our heart, because that's what Paul admonishes us to do. To ponder in our heart whether we live as generous people. Because it's the motives of the heart that makes the sacrifice acceptable. It's not the fact that you give. It's the state of your heart in giving. Giving not out of compulsion or resentment or begrudgingly, but giving with all generosity. Now, culturally speaking, we live in a culture that emphasizes scarcity. There's a long essay that's famous about the problem of scarcity. The problem of scarcity is this, is that because we don't feel like we have enough, we go and make more. And then we feel like we always perpetually feel like we don't have enough to give. It's like the busy person. There's an old story that I once heard where the monk was cutting down the tree with a dull saw, and he had this saw and he's sawing away at the tree. And someone came out to him, he said, "Take time and sharpen your saw." He said, "I don't have time. I have to cut down this tree." But that is also tied a little bit to the culture of scarcity. Because while he's sawing away, rushing to cut down the tree, he's unwilling to do the very thing that would make the tree cuttable and make it smoother and easier. And so, financially, and with time, the way this applies is the people, everyone ultimately has time. It's about their willingness to give it. And oftentimes, we can see when we analyze our own lives what we're willing to give it to. And we can see when we analyze our own lives where we give our money, what we have money for and what we don't have money for. It's very, it's in your budget. Look at it. It tells a story about us. And the challenge in all this is to sharpen the saw, to not give in to this idea that we don't have anything to give, because, you know, the Lord praises the widow's mite. He praises that widow's little gift. And some of us can only give a widow's mite. But it is exactly that widow's mite that is needed. And it might be the widow's mite that spiritually alleviates us, that changes our soul. Because part of giving, whether it is giving of your time, your talents, or your treasures, and part of living to become a generous person is faking it till you make it. It is essentially the process of being willing to commit to something until you reap the benefits, until you experience the reality of what it is to have a generous heart. Because we can't always wait for the feelings, frankly. So a challenge has been laid at our feet. Are you generous? At the end of today's epistle, the Apostle Paul says that this church was going to thank God for the people who had donated, who were generous givers. Thank God for the church of Corinth. And the question for us, the final question I'll ask, is that in our life, are there people that thank God for our generosity? I know that every year with the church budget that I try to attempt to thank God for your generosity when you give to the church. And for the pledge, for the parish hall, in all various ways, we try to not only be thankful, but to, in all sincerity, realize that this is a charity and that it doesn't have to exist. It can be a beautiful McDonald's in 10 years. If we want it to run out of cash, that's easy. So we're very thankful for those who give. But we should continue to grow that and challenge ourselves to think, again, is there other people in my life that thank God for my generosity? Or do they thank me because I've given my time to them? Because I've done something that needed to be done? Do they thank me because when they're in financial straits, I help them out? Because there are people in our parish that are in financial straits. I think you got the message. In the end, through the prayers of the Apostle Paul, may God give us a generous heart. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, Christ is in our midst. Yes.